But the question is he allowed to think any less of Shlomo? Because Shlomo is causing him to lose his pranosa because he's being thrown out of the inn.
Same as everybody.
Started at the Turnway Northwest London, Sunday, 20th of 7th, 19th of June, Rabbi Moshe Akiva Brandeis Shlita, Dangerous Humility. This week's Torah has been sponsored by Family Kirsch, Lil Nishmas, Rabbi Shai Nochem, Rabbi Avrom, Gostchuk, Zifron Lebrocha, whose Yad site is the Shabbos.
Good morning. I'd like to begin, although it's Sunday morning, with a connection to this week's Parsha, Parsha Shlach Lecha. Now, the center stage of Parsha Shlach Lecha is, of course, the story of the Meraglim, the spies that were sent in by Moshe Rabbeinu to see the land, to see Eretz Yisrael ahead of time. Now, we may know that Moshe Rabbeinu foresaw that Yehoshua would not join in with the plot of the Meraglim. Yehoshua would stay independent, and therefore he changed his name from what was Hoshea to Yehoshua. He added a Yud to his name. That Yud was supposed to be a tefillah, a bracha, for Yehoshua to save himself from the Atzas Meraglim, from the plot of the Meraglim, who were planning and plotting to come back with an adverse report about Eretz Yisrael. There's a few problems I have with that, sorry?
Why was Kolo's name Sakhar Nosh changed for the same reason?
Gewaldig. So one question's already been asked here in the audience. We have two more to go. The first question is, I'll do it in your order, I'll start with your question. If Moshe with Ruach HaKodesh foresaw Yehoshua staying independent of this plot, then surely he could have also seen Ruach HaKodesh that Kolo would join Yehoshua. So why did not daven for Kalev? What's the difference? Favoritism, chas v'sholem. Secondly, what's this Yud about? It's a nice idea, ko hoshiachom mi'atzas meraglim, put Hashem into his name. But we know from the Medrash that it was the Yud that was taken away from Sora, the end of Parashas Lech Lecha, when Sorai had her name changed to Sora. So the Yud complained, the Medrash tells us. The Yud said, where am I going? You've just taken me away from this, from one of the Yimois, from a lovely position in the name of Sora Yimeinu, and you've taken me away to make place for the letter He. What about me? So the Ribbono Shel Olam gave the space for the Yud in the name of Yehoshua all those years later. But surely there's something more to it than a Yud complaining and leaving Sora, ending up on Yeshua's name. What's the connection? And thirdly, I'd like to quote an Arizal, which is cryptic and very difficult to understand. And it's a Pinchas Roberts who we will use his answer to eventually come to settle this very strange sounding Arizal. Arizal says, take the name Moshe, work out the gematria, minus Hevel, the gematria of Hevel, the son of Adam Harishim, and you end up with the name Korach. Lovely gematria. It's like one of those gematrias you had in Sheva Brachas, where someone's desperate for gematria. Then Sosin, the Simcha, name of the Chosin, the Kala, the street where the Chuppah was, is the gematria of the family name. And everyone claps. What's this? Moshe minus Hevel equals Korach. That's their reason. Sorry?
What's the Kesha?
What's the Kesha?
But,
so these are the three questions.
It was a
Gilgamesh. Oh, see, I think you guys could just stand up there. Okay? I'll sit down and listen to this speech. So you've got...
He's testing you.
Okay. So I'd like to begin by using the Chofetz Chaim in this week's parasha. The Chofetz Chaim says, he points out this problem that we heard earlier. What's the difference between Yeshua and Kalev? Why is he davening for Yeshua and not for Kalev? And the Chofetz Chaim says that Moshe, who stands for Ruach HaKodesh, also had a perceived the personalities. He summed up the personalities of Yehoshua and Kalev. And they were two different people. Each one had their strengths. Yehoshua, and in fact we can perhaps, with a little bit of leeway and using a bit of freedom, to say that the world on a very basic level, a very basic level, can be split up into two personalities. One is the personality which is forthcoming, outgoing, ready to say, ready, you know, the type of fellow in shul who shushes when someone's talking in the wrong place. He says it the way it is, he likes to put things right, and he has no problem with it, even if it means losing some friends.
Who?
I don't know, you have to find out the names. I'm saying there are people who are willing to...
Sorry.
You have to ask the one who's talking about what you can say, what you can't say. But either way, you have a type of personality that has goals and is raring to go and will fight for those goals and those ideals in life. That's you, okay. So we've got one name here. So then and he says, that was Yehoshua. Yehoshua was a leader by nature. He indeed took over from Moshe Rabbeinu. He took that position of leadership for Klal Yisrael. A leader has to be someone who's not scared of the public, who's willing to say it how it is, who's willing to stick up for what's correct and what's right in life. That was Yehoshua. Then you have Kalev. Kalev was the personality, what came naturally to him is to go along with the people. So I want to call it a people's pleaser, because that's cheap. That's someone who's willing to say anything that makes other people happy. But he's willing to please the people and use that facility in order to influence the people. To use a very cheap example, but just as an example, you have, you know, if you have a kanoi, that's correct to be kanoi, it's a way of life. Pinchas was a kanoi. To be zealous, to be willing to say it how it is. But it's not the fellow that will get the job in the JLE. It's not the type of rabbi who has the brisket element of saying it how it is, whatever's going on, and tells you his hashkafas in the first meeting, whether you like it or not. He's not going to be on the top, on the short list for a kirov organization, because that doesn't work in their world. It works perhaps very well in the world of yeshivas, where everyone's already sold to the idea of Torah, so you give them the extra boost. On the other hand, so that would be Yehoshua. Again, it's only a cheap moshel. Of course, these were perfect people, and we're only understanding it on our level. Kalev, on the other hand, again, to use the cheap example, but nevertheless, as an example, he would be the kiruv rabbi, the one who goes along with the people, who makes them feel that he's with them. And then when the moment is right, by Yahas Kalev, when they come back to Eretz Yisrael, he hasn't let on for the entire journey of 40 days through the land. He has not let on his personal view. And so when he comes to Eretz Yisrael, says the Chofetz Chaim, he's able to quiet the crowds. The crowds that are now being sold and bought into the idea of the Meraglim that Eretz Yisrael is a terrible place. Kalev can bang on the bima and say, Rabbeisai, and everyone's quiet. Go on. What did this Ben Amram do to us? And they believe that Kalev is with them. That's only possible because he hasn't let on his personal views. He's the ultimate kiruv rabbi. He goes along with them, he's there for the barbecue, he sits with them, he makes them feel as a friend, and when the moment is right, he tells them, come, time to put on tefillin. Rabbi said, this is Lashon Hara. Eretz Yisrael, Ben Avraham, he took us out of Mitzrayim, he gave us all the Esamakas, Mon in the Midbar, the Torah, Har Sinai, come on. You got to trust him and the Ribbono Shel Olam. What Eretz Yisrael really is, that's Kalev. Says the Chofetz Chaim Yehoshua, who would face the Meraglim and be their opponent for these 40 days, was in a situation of danger. And he needed a bracha to protect them, me'atzas Meraglim. He needed the protection, physical protection. That's how the Chofetz Chaim learns. Kalev didn't need it. You go along with the people, you don't need the protection. That's the difference between the behavior that Moshe Rabbeinu did with Yehoshua and that which he behaved with Kalev. With Yehoshua, it was a matter of protection. He needed the Yud Kor Hoshiach, Hashem should save you from the Meraglim. Whereas with Kalev, it wasn't necessary. That's the Chofetz Chaim's Mahalach. I'd like to take it a step further. Yehoshua, with his personality, has another dangerous spiritual danger. And that is a person who's willing to stand up for what's right, to be an individual amongst the crowd and say it how it is in the danger of gaiva, of it going to his head. of becoming haughty. To be able to stand there when thousands of people disagree with you and be able to stay strong in your convictions takes a very strong personality, but it can also go to a person's head. There's that danger. The danger of gaiva. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu found a way to help Yeshua by changing his name, which is also his essence. The Yud, which was added to his name, as we said earlier, was taken from the name of Sarai. Sarai, if you look back at the end of Lech Lecha, Rashi brings from the Gemara in Brachos that up until this point, Hashem says to Sarah, you're Sarai for yourself. You're working on yourself. You can be strong. You've been the wife of Avram Avinu. To be alone against an entire world, you believe in monotheism and you are selling it. No matter if the entire world are serving idols, paganism was the servitude of the day. That's what everyone was serving, was Avodah Zarah. And yet you and Avram Avinu stood strong. Me'eva Hanor, Avram, Sarah. Till now it was a yud. Sarai, for yourself. A princess for yourself. Now it's time to become Sarah. Rashi brings it. Now it's time to become Sarah. A princess for all. A noble woman for all. To be amongst the people and have an influence in the masses. Perhaps we can take this idea and use it for how this yud became Yeshua. Since yud, the yud of Sarah, where she was on her own as an individual and working on herself, is the anivus of Sarah before she became, so to speak, the cure of Rebetzin. The one who has to be amongst the people and bring everyone close to Hashem. The yud of Sarah, when she's on her own, when she's for herself, is what was used to add to Yeshua's name. That's why how Yeshua gets his name. He takes the anivus from Sarah. In fact, we find that Sarah, when she was 20, Chayesara, we're told, when she was 20, she was as beautiful as she was when she was 7. So Reb Pinchas Robus asks in his Shirim, Zeichet Tzalik Levracha, he asks, how is it that you compare a 20-year-old woman to a 7-year-old woman? She was as beautiful as when she was 7. A 20-year-old is more naturally beautiful than a 7-year-old.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah?
That's a good question.
A 20-year-old is naturally more beautiful than a 7-year-old. So why is it that we compare? It says Reb Pinchas Roberts, we're comparing here not only in physical beauty, but in inner beauty. A 7-year-old has no concept of gaiva. A 7-year-old has no idea of the fact that she's attractive and how that should be something to her credit. It's just what she looks like and she gives no second thought to it. Once a woman is 20 years old, it can start going to her head. When she was 20, the beauty of that 20-year-old Sarah was as beautiful as it was when she was 7. That's how much it meant to her. That's how much it affected her personality. Zero. It didn't affect her. She was one of the most beautiful women in the world, we're told. But it meant to her. It affected her personality as much as it would a 7-year-old. That is the epitome of anivus. That's when she was Sarai. Doesn't affect her. That yud was now given to Yehoshua. Yehoshua, you'll be audacious. You'll fight. You'll go ahead and tell the Meragdim that they're wrong on the 40 days. But you need the yud. You must be humble at the same time. The perfect Torah personality has both. Now here we see Kalev with a stronger element, perhaps, of going along with the people. But he was also strong in his convictions and was able to speak up when necessary. Yehoshua was also perfect. His strength was being able to speak up, but he needs the anivus to balance it out. Two perfect people, just strength in different places. To use an example, I would like to use a couple of stories. I just need a clock here somewhere. Oh, nice big one there. Just a couple of examples that I heard recently from Rabbi Dr. Gerber, a local London name, Rabbi Yosef Gerber. He spoke at a chassan recently in Stamford Hill of a family member, and he shared the following story of his Rebbe, Moshe Schwab. These are two stories which bring out how one person, just a more recent personality, has this perfect balance of strength of character and at the same time so humble. Two phone calls, one Rabbi Moshe Schwab. In one case, this was with Rabbi Yosef Gerber himself, where Rabbi Moshe had convinced him to go to a wedding in France. They were picked up by this car that wasn't very roadworthy. He said this was before MOT, it would never have passed. And they were on their way to the airport, and as you can expect, it broke down on the way to the airport with only an hour to go to the flight. So the fellow said, okay, Rabbi Moshe, please leave the car with your rebbetzin and I'll work it out, you know, find a taxi. They're hailing a taxi, they're on the way to the airport, and as they get to the airport with minutes to go to the gate closing, so young Yosef Gerber, Rebbetzin Schwab are making their way to the gate, the gate's literally closing, and Rabbi Moshe's at a payphone. What's the Mashgiach doing at a payphone? They go over to see Rabbi Moshe, we need to go. Another 30 seconds on the phone, he comes with it, and they make it to the flight. He can't hold himself back. And he says, Rebbe, you had to make a phone call now? Minutes to go to the flight? So he says, I was calling the AA for the fellow who had taken us to the airport. He's broken down on the motorway to make sure he's being looked after. That's what he's busy with. So we can't just leave him stranded on the motorway. I was making a phone call to the breakdown recovery service. One story of Rav Moshe. And he says another story of Rav Moshe. He says once Rav Moshe was going fundraising for the yeshiva. I assume it's gates of the yeshiva. In London. And he went to a yid's house who obviously had a difficult day. And ringing on the bell, a young girl comes to the door. And this girl, Rav Moshe hears the father saying from upstairs, tell him I'm not home. So she says, my father's not available. My father's not home. Moshe says, thank you, closes the door. Goes to the nearest payphone. He calls the house. The father picks up the phone. He says, listen, on a personal level, for personal injury and embarrassment, complete mechila. I'm happy to let it go. Not a problem. But for the Torah I represent, for the yeshiva I represent, for the hanhala, for the bochrim, I can't. I'm not able to forgive the Torah's honor and puts down the phone. Within seconds, there's a yid running down the street in slippers and a robe, running after Moshe. He realizes it must be the nearest payphone. He says, well, please, please come to my house. I beg you, mechila. Moshe comes to his house. He writes a very generous check, and Rav Moshe leaves. Two phone calls, one Rav Moshe Schwab. That perfect Torah personality. On the one hand, so humble, so meek, so sensitive. On the other hand, the same man making a phone call for Kavod HaTorah. He didn't know he'd get a check at the end of that. He thought he may never be open. The door may never open again. He was making a point. I can't be Moichel the Torah's Kavod. That's the perfect personality. We spoke about Kalev and Yehoshua. I want to go back. We said that this is a very general dual personality, two personalities on a basic level in humankind. Let's go back to the beginning of time. Cain and Hevel. I mentioned that earlier. Cain and Hevel. Cain and Hevel says a Hashem Yishmor with these two personalities. Hevel, true to his name, nothingness. Not much there. Very meek individual. He didn't initiate the carbon. He copied Cain. Soft, a lovely character, but not someone who has goals and ambitions, someone who wants to acquire. Cain, Loshon Kinyan, Loshon acquisition, Loshon of conquering. Cain has ambitions, he has goals, a great personality to have. If it doesn't have another, if it's not humble, jealousy comes in. My brother Hevel got the carbon, was accepted with more love than mine. He ends up murdering his own brother. That's the personality of ambition without humbleness. The danger of ambition without being meek, without having another. But what's so terrible about Hevel? What's the big deal? Cain, I get it. To be self-assured And to have ambition, there's enough dictators in the world that can teach us what that means when it doesn't go along with humbleness. We're watching it today live. What happens when someone has ambition without another, without any sensitivity to human beings? Easy to understand the kind mentality. Hevel, what's so terrible? Humbleness. Okay, see, he has got goals and ambitions. It's dangerous. It's also dangerous, but in a different way. I'll quote a Gemara. No less than a Gemara. Gittin and Vavam Adalaf in the Sugis about the Churban. Omer Rabbi Yochanan. And the son Nusoy. Shereb Zcharia ben Avkulas. The humbleness. The anivus. This word that we're so proud of usually. Hichriva es beisenu. Destroyed the Beis Hamikdosh. The Sorfa Seichalenu. Burnt down the Heichal. Meglisonu Me'atzenu. And sent us into exile, into Golus, from our land. Harsh words. What's the story behind it? I won't go through all the details, but in short, a man, a messenger, had come from the Caesar, from the Caesar, from Rome, with a carbon to be brought in the Beis HaMikdash. And they had a discussion amongst the Sanhedrin whether to accept it or not. On the one hand, this fellow who wanted to destroy Klal Yisrael had put a mum in the carbon, a blemish, rendering it unfit for Hakrava. How can you bring up a carbon with a mum? On the other hand, they wanted to kill this man. This way he couldn't go back to report what happened with the animal which the Caesar had sent. Said Reb Zachari ben Avkulas, people will say that someone who's matil mum bekodshim, someone who puts a blemish on an animal, is chayav misa, gets killed. We can't do it. So the fellow returned to Rome, reported that they wouldn't accept the animal, obviously leaving out the important detail that he had made a blemish on the animal. And the rest, as they say, is history. But the Gemara blames it on the anivus, the patience. Rashi calls it the savlonus of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas. He wasn't willing, says Rashi, to kill. Rashi says this because he wasn't willing to kill the messenger. That's what he should have done. He should have killed this man. It's not always the right thing, humbleness. Sometimes life and situations call for standing up for what's correct, for what's right, even if the personality of the individual is anivus. Sometimes we have to speak up. I mean, as he had, all he had done was put a blemish. Is that Mesira?
Yeah.
He was going to. I mean, I'll say about Austin. At the moment, he's not chayv yet, right? That he would have eventually became chayv.
There's a way to go back.
Can we kill someone on seeing what he's going to do?
Right.
Same sofa. That's you gotta leave that to the Rebbeinu Shlomo himself. To me, when it's about Shor Shama, when it's same sofa. So we have Cain and we have Hevel. The Cain personality is dangerous, more obviously dangerous, without another. But the Hevel personality can also lead to danger, as we have in the case of Zechariah ben Avkulas. What Moshe Rabbeinu was looking to give Yoshua was the perfect balance. What a true Torah personality, what a perfect Torah personality calls for. Both midas combined into one. Now, we heard earlier, for those of you who listened in, there was someone who mentioned a fascinating fact. I looked up the Seder Hadoros. I didn't know this till this week. You know, I'm not talking like you. I looked up Seder Hadoros. I decided to see, is there any connection? I'm finding Cain Behavel, Kol of Yeshua, Moshe Rabbeinu. And I found the Seder Hadoros. He writes that Moshe Rabbeinu was a Gilgal, listen carefully, of the Toiv Shebehevel. Not the Gilgal of Hevel, of Toiv Shebehevel. Of the good parts of Hevel. Where are the bad parts of Hevel, poor fellow? He lived a nice life, gave a carbon, and died very quickly. So here we understand where the problem is, why it's Toiv Shebehevel. He's a Gilgal of the Anova, the humbleness of Hevel, but without the problems of Hevel. Moshe Rabbeinu was every inch a leader. When he didn't lose a single war, and he waged plenty of them. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Onav Mikol Adam, were told at the end of last week's parasha, Va'ish Moshe Onav Mikol Ha'adam, from all the people who have ever walked this earth, Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest Onav. You can't offend him if you tried. The same Moshe Rabbeinu when it comes to Korach in next week's parasha. He wants the Ribbono Shel Olam to create a new way of killing people. The same Moshe Rabbeinu that's trying to make peace, the peacemaker, he begs, he cajoles, he tries to make peace in an argument that has nothing to do with him. The most one-sided argument in the history of humanity. The same Moshe Rabbeinu, when he realizes these people aren't changing, changes his personality. He changes from the honor of Ha'ish Moshe, who is the honor of Mikol Ha'adam, and he uses Moshe the leader, audaciousness, and he says, Ribbono Shel Olam, create a new way of wiping out these people because Torah is at stake. Principles are at stake. Torah Shebaal Peh, the Sora, which is coming through me, is at stake. The future of the world and Klal Yisrael is at stake. Kill them in a way that will never be forgotten. If you start with the Messiah, with tradition, you're wiped out. And that can only happen if the earth opens up. The same Moshe Rabbeinu. The perfect personality that has both in one man. He has the Toiv Shebehevah. He has the Toiv Shebehevah, the Anivus, without the danger of the Anivus on its own. He's willing and does stand up whenever it's correct. The same Moshe Rabbeinu that spends days and days and days begging for the Ribbono Shel Olam to be Meichel, Mecheni Na Mesifracha, wipe me out, but don't wipe out Klal Yisrael. When he sees the ego, he takes a divine Luchos. Imagine taking a Sefer Torah, and it's not a Sefer Torah, it's the Luchos itself, and throws it to the ground, his own idea, without asking permission, shatters it to pieces. And it never comes back. The Luchos Shnius were not the Luchos Rishonis. The same Moshe Rabbeinu. The same Moshe who is an Onov can stand up and does when necessary. So who is Korach? We know now Moshe Rabbeinu. We've understood what he gave to Yehoshua, as opposed to all of the Meraglim who didn't have that hope. Korach was the Gilgal of Cain. Vayikach Korach, this I saw in Rabbi Yosef Gerber's book actually, separately. He writes this from the Mekubalim. So I haven't seen this inside, I couldn't find it in Seder Hadoras. But he writes that Korach was a Gilgal of Cain. Vayikach Korach, he must have a quote for this. Vayikach Korach, he took the bad parts of Cain. The Lashon Kicha, Kinyan. Kicha is taking, Kinyan is acquiring, acquisition. That's Cain. That's what he took. He took the personality of Cain without the Anivus. Korach was a great individual, a pikeach. Korach had leadership skills. He got a huge crowd to join him. But when you have that goal-oriented, self-assured individual without the Anivus, without the humbleness, the end is, as we all know, what happened to Korach. So let's go back to the question which we asked on the Arizal, this cryptic and strange Arizal, where the Arizal writes, take Moshe, the Gematria of Moshe, which is 345, minus Hevel, which is 37, and you end up with Korach, 308. Now all of a sudden it makes so much sense. Moshe, Rabbeinu, minus the Anivus of Hevel, the humbleness of Hevel, what are you left with? An ambitious, goal-oriented, self-assured individual, but without humbleness, equals Korach. Moshe, without the Gilgal that he took, the Tov Shebehevel, you end up Chas V'Shalom with the Korach. May we all be Zoicha to have only Moshe Rabbeinus who have both personalities in our lives, Be'ez Hashem. Have a very good day.